Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out when you get a chance. It's all lots and lots of information, folks. Thousands of archives of the show, interviews that we've done with people in the past 6 or 7 years are there. Thousands, actually, of articles from members of my brain trust, as well as some that I've written, are all there. You can check out our blog. You can subscribe to our newsletter. You can find Joan Pride there. She's all over our website, and she's deposited a lot of great information with us over the years. And she is our good friend. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing great. We missed you last week when I was in Houston.
Well, thank you.
Did you miss us?
That. Desperately.
Yeah, I could tell. I knew. By the way, Joan, this is a red letter day. On this day in 1803, the U.S. Senate approved the Louisiana Purchase. President Jefferson convinced the Senate that this, even though they didn't have the constitutional ability to make a purchase like this through a treaty, he actually convinced them that it was the right thing to do, and they went along with him. And I was just pointing out earlier, Joan, that even though the people in New Orleans probably think the federal government may have contributed to not responding very well to their problems when Hurricane Rita Katrina came through, you know, it could be worse. It could be still owned by the French, and they could have been the responders.
Well, that is one way of looking at it. Sure.
Imagine. I don't even want to think about how ugly that could have been, Joan. That could have gotten way out of hand, don't you think?
Hard to tell, but maybe.
Come on, Joan. We're talking about Jacques Chirac. Surely you can stick your finger in his eye just for a minute.
Well, gosh, he'd have to do a pretty lousy job to do worse than the U.S. government did.
I don't know. Now, I think the French are capable of that, Joan. Joan, moving from France to Detroit. That's the lead line. Well, I'm the king of Segway, Joan.
That's the
lead line there in your Kiplinger letter is what you call the growing mess in Detroit. Now, tell the audience what kind of a mess they've got in Detroit.
Well, not only do the three major automakers have declining sales, but also you've got a lot of serious financial problems with parts suppliers. And this has sort of all been triggered. I mean, we knew this was coming, but a lot of this has been triggered by the announcement of the bankruptcy filing by Delphi, which is the big parts supplier.
That was spun off of GM 4 or 5 years ago.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Joan, do you remember 4 or 5 years ago when you and I were talking about how the car manufacturers were putting more and more of a squeeze on their suppliers? They were demanding that they work with them online. Remember that?
And, right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that they were putting more and more of a squeeze on their suppliers to provide them with lower costs, lower prices and everything. It sounds like a few of these chickens are coming home to roost a little bit, doesn't it?
Boy, no question about it. It's a real concern.
Basically, that and other reasons have pushed Delphi into bankruptcy.
Yes.
They're in Chapter 11 right
Absolutely.
Now, aren't they?
Yeah. That what I had said was that they had filed recently.
Yeah. And so think about that. I mean, Delphi is huge, isn't it? I mean, it's almost like a fourth U.S. car manufacturer, isn't it?
You could look at it that way, sure.
Well, I mean, think about how much of the automobiles that we drive and maintain, how much of those are those parts come from Delphi. You might think you actually could say it's a fourth, like the fourth estate, so to speak.
In a way, sure.
So even though Delphi is not a brand name, I say it's a brand name, but it's not one of the big three, it could be considered one of the big four. And so I guess my point, Joan, is what if this had been Chrysler or Ford or GM? There'd be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth right now. And what I'm saying is that they really ought to be anyway, because Delphi is almost like those guys.
You've pretty much crystallized the point that we're making here, exactly.
Well, I read, Joan. I can read here. But go ahead. What have I missed?
Fine job.
What have I missed? Anything?
What have you missed? No, I just said you crystallized the point perfectly.
Yeah. Well, you know, Did you read the Wall Street Journal article yesterday about Steve Miller, not the band leader, not the singer, folks, but the chairman of Delphi was being interviewed about this, and somebody said something. You know, they were talking about comparing what happened to Delphi to the other three, the big three automakers. And he basically, and I wish I had it in front of me. I thought I brought it with me, but I guess I didn't. But he basically, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, basically said, you know what? It's just a matter of time before it's one or all of those guys. And I'm not stretching his words very much at all.
Right. Scary. Very scary.
Well, imagine, Joan. I mean, what do you think would happen if let's leave General Motors. Let's say Ford or Chrysler. Of course, Chrysler's already been there. They were there 25 years ago.
Right.
And the government bailed them out, didn't they?
That's right. Boy, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, that was back before you were born, Joan. But
right.
but seriously, we have a crisis in this country, don't we, with regard to that industry?
Yeah, we sure do. And there's been a lot in the news lately about what GM at least has been trying to do to cut costs.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically in the benefits area. And as you know, they have difficulties with costs because this is sort of the last big stand of the major unions is the big three automakers.
Well, you know, Joan, I remember when in the 20th century, if you had to list the top three forces in the marketplace that made the 20th century America what it was then and what it is now, two of those three would be housing, construction, housing, and the second one would be automobiles, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not sure maybe there would be others vying for the third slot, but certainly automobiles would be one of the three, wouldn't it?
Oh, sure.
And but that's changing. That's because of the global marketplace. That's really changing, isn't it? Quite a bit.
Yes. It is.
And let's get back to these to one of the main issues, Joan, that's causing this, and that's the rates. The Miller, Steve Miller, again, he said, we can't afford to pay $65 an hour for an unskilled position. Apparently, with the wages and the benefits, that's what it's costing them.
Right, and that's the problem. And healthcare costs must be killing them.
Exactly, which is part of that $65.
Right.
Stand by, we're going to talk about this issue some more. Got a few more things to cover that Kiplinger points out that I think you're going to be interested in. This is forecasting, folks, that Kiplinger's doing, that I think we need to look forward to thinking about what may be coming down the pike for the rest of this industry. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Through my window today.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about the Delphi, the huge auto parts manufacturer Delphi, which is spun off of GM, recently took Chapter 11, went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The truth is, I think we should point out, Joan, Chapter 11 means that they're just in for reorganization, and obviously their plan is to come out of it.
Anyone who's followed the major airlines knows this to be true.
Right. But now, of course, there's no guarantee. In fact, it's very difficult to come out of Chapter 11. Sometimes the Chapter 11 prevents the creditors from getting their money so long that the creditors can actually petition the judge to take them out of Chapter 11, put them into Chapter 7. Let's go ahead and liquidate this thing. We want our cash. We want whatever we can get on the dollar.
Right.
And so one of the things about it, Chapter 11 is a serious desperation move almost for a company. Because it does give you some relief, but it puts you in jeopardy because what happens, it puts your company in the hands of someone else, namely the courts, the bankruptcy courts, who are also influenced by the other side, the creditors.
Sure.
And so it's a tenuous situation. It's not something you want to do if you don't have to, but it is a desperate move that you make as a last resort, so that if you actually do default on anything. But one of the things that's happening, it's interesting, Joan, is that, and by the way, folks, I mentioned that Steve Miller, the president of Delphi, said something about $65 an hour worker. I also want to point out that Kiplinger reported that this week too, Joan. You guys,
oh, thank you.
You guys had that as well, which took my breath away, Joan.
Yeah.
When I saw that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I would have said benefits and all, you know, $50 an hour, but 65.
Yeah.
And he's talking about unskilled, not even, you know, not
right.
even somebody who's a real technician or something. But what are the unions, Joan? How are the unions reacting to this?
Well, and as we saw this week, which you have to remember that the letter came out before a lot of this news, is that
right.
The unions are starting to cooperate. And these are unions that had always said they would never give ground on certain things. And mm-hmm. what I'm, of course, referring to is retiree health insurance benefits.
Right, right. Well, Joan, remember a month ago when I said the 21st century, one of the markers of the 21st century is going to be that Americans are going to have to become more self-insured. Americans are going to have to be more healthcare consumers and less patients. Remember,
right.
we've talked about that.
Oh,
well,
sure.
This is the UAB getting it.
Yes.
Right. I mean, when because they know now where they have had no copays, either no or very little copays for a visit. They now know that those days are
yeah.
gone.
That's
those
stunning.
Are history.
It's just stunning to me.
Right.
No copays.
Every American in the 21st century is going to have some level of self-insurance. The only way to solve the healthcare crisis that we have right now, the healthcare providing crisis that we have right now, the insurance crisis, is for people. For everyone, I don't care if they work for the government.
Right.
I don't care if they're teachers. I don't care what they do. Everybody's going to have some level of self-insurance, which means, Joan, obviously, they're going to have some kind of copay. That's what that means. Or real self-insurance, like a small business owner has, and they're going to have to. We're all going to have to be more consumers and less patients, don't you think?
Right, and we were raised in the era when you just went to the doctor and that was it.
And the company paid for it.
You paid your deductible, and then the company paid 80%
yep.
or whatever it was. That was the old, old fee-for-service, which went out of favor 10, 20 years ago. And it's taken a long time for people to realize that they kind of need to be, you know, smart shoppers in this area, just as they would do when they, you know, go to the store.
Well, just like the airlines, Joan, the car manufacturers are still paying for the deals that they made in the 20th century for defined benefits, which includes health care, right?
Right, absolutely.
And there are not that many of those anymore. I mean, that's like a dinosaur, isn't it, defined benefits?
Right. Interestingly enough, Kiplinger still has a defined benefit plan, but most companies do not.
Yeah, it's a rare thing. You know, Joan, one thing that's interesting about the union's relationship with the big three auto companies, the way they've structured their deals, if they go on strike, they basically get virtually the same pay, don't they?
As during the time
yeah.
that they were working?
When they're on strike.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, I think so.
Ooh.
I think that's what happens. And so, anyway, but the other thing, Joan, that bankruptcy can do for some of these companies, as we saw with United,
mm-hmm.
it can allow them to shift their defined benefit responsibility over to the government, to try to get that over to the government, doesn't it?
Right.
What's the name of that group? What's the name of that?
Oh, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the reason. One of the reasons I have you on the show, Joan. I can never remember that.
I thought there was a reason.
That's at least one of the reasons, Joan.
Well, thank you.
But one of the things that's going to happen, Joan, is I think it's clear, and largely now, I think, Joan, because of the high gas prices. I mean, cause and effect.
Right.
We're going to see some rocky road ahead for the automobile industry in the United States, aren't we?
I think there's no question about it.
And 5 years from now, I will predict, we won't recognize the U.S. automobile industry 5 years from now, certainly 10 years from now, maybe even less. Quick break, right back with Joan Pride after these messages. 29 after, this show is brought to you by IBM, Office Depot, and Administaff.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging around with us. And Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one of the things that I wanted to correct that I said a minute ago that I think I may have said incorrectly, and I want to clear this up. I think if the automobile workers strike, they don't get the pay from the company then as they like if they were laid off. So it almost would be. My point is the full pay and benefits, or the 95% pay and full benefits that they would get. I think that's what they get if they are laid off by the company.
Oh, I see.
But if they strike, okay, they don't get that. So something I read said that GM almost would welcome a strike.
Ah.
It would save them money if they struck.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I apologize, folks, if I meant to finish my thought there, and I for some reason I didn't, which I'm afraid I'm want to do from time to time, Joe. But anyway, it's going to be an interesting thing to observe, folks, and I pay attention to it. It's going to affect you. It's going to affect the economy. It's going to affect your investments. It's going to affect the way you get around. Who knows what the Johnny, I think the whole transportation issue of America is going to change over the next 10, 15 years, don't you? With needing to conserve petroleum and I don't think the supply and demand thing is going to get any better. Somebody told me that I read somewhere recently that China alone is going to suck up whatever increased production that we have in petroleum. If we could go get more oil out of the ground, they could take all we could provide them. So, I mean, I think, Joan, 10 years, 15 years from now, I don't think we'll recognize the way you and I move around. I think we'll be.
Wow.
I mean, I still think we'll probably be on four wheels, but
yeah.
I think it'll be four wheels that are going to be quite a bit different. What do you think?
Yeah. No. I think you've really laid it out there. I think that's right.
Well, I think that's what we've got to do, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
I don't think we have a choice. Joan, let's move over and talk about something that I know you're very close to because you actually attended an event recently on taxes. And so that's where we are, folks. We're talking about some of the tax reform issues that are floating around, Joan. They don't seem to be getting a lot of attention, but there was a conference, wasn't there?
Right. Well, this was the kind of the last meeting of the President's Tax Reform Advisory Panel, which was charged with coming up ways of overhauling the tax code. Now, they didn't have a clean slate. The President put down some parameters. He wanted at least one option that was based on the current code, and he wanted them to, and whatever they offered him, they had to retain some kind of tax break for mortgage interest and a tax break for charitable contributions. Mm-hmm. So in this final meeting, they haven't offered their recommendations yet, but they kind of sketched out what it is that they're going to recommend. And they're going to give him two recommendations, but they look awfully similar. And what it is going to do, it would change the income tax enough that it would look more, even though you'd still be filing a return, it would look more like a consumption tax, a tax on consumption, than a tax on income.
Mm. I don't like that.
You don't like that?
No, I don't like a national sales tax. Which
well,
is
I didn't say. Remember, I didn't say
well,
national
consumption
sales tax.
Tax is a sales tax.
Thing. Well, you could look at it that way, but it's not collected as a sales tax.
Well,
it's
I know
not a national sales tax.
But here's the problem, Joan. The 14th Amendment is it the 14th or 16th? Which one is it that provides for income tax? I think it's the 14th Amendment. That amendment provides for the collection of income tax by the government. If you don't repeal the 14th Amendment or the amendment that allows for income tax, but you create another type of tax, all you've done is create a second way for the government to tax us, and it can get out of hand. We know what happens when politicians have that opportunity.
Right.
So that's the reason why I support Steve Forbes' idea of a flat tax, which abolishes the existing tax plan. But I think what you found out in your conference is that the abolishing of the current tax code, that ain't happening, is it?
Well, boy, it sure doesn't look very likely. Well, it's not up to this panel, though. Bush could still.
But they could have recommended that, and they chose. It seems to me that they've chosen not to. not
right.
to go there.
Well,
so
right, that's right. I mean, they would argue that in a sense they are abolishing the current tax code, but I think they're mm-hmm. really not.
No. They're just moving the deck chairs around.
They're tinkering around
on the
edges,
Titanic.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing, I think. We gotta get rid of this tax reform, this tax code, folks. It's an abomination. It's a dinosaur. It's based on the 20th century marketplace, and we're in the 21st century, politicians. In case you haven't noticed lately, we actually have moved into a new decade, a new century, a new millennium. And I wish they'd pay a little more attention to that. We're going to let Joan tell us a little bit more about what she learned at that meeting, and then we're going to move on down and talk about the economy and a little bit of politics right after these messages. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. You're not sitting there alone. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, I would like to encourage my audience to check out your website. Won't you give it to us, please?
Right. Well, our website is www.kiplinger.com.
It's a good site, folks. I've used it for years. Even I have been a subscriber to their letter for a long time, but I also have been a subscriber to their website, the information that they provide on the website, the forecasting, that's a lot more than just what's on the main pages of the free part of the website, but there's a lot of good stuff in the free section, folks.
Right.
I encourage you to check it out. And also they have some of the best publications in terms of business news in the world. The Kiplinger Letter is the one that Joan and I work off of every week, and that's now in its 83rd, I think, Joan, the 83rd year. You guys just had your 82nd anniversary, if I'm not mistaken, on the year there.
Right.
And it's been around a long time. Joan was not an original employee, although she says I was an original subscriber. And you can get it by mail, you can get it by email, and that's the weekly Kiplinger Letter. You got three biweeklies, though, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter. And then don't you have a magazine or something, Joan?
We sure do. It's called Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine.
Which you can find on the newsstands, or you can subscribe and have it come to your office the way I do. And you know, Joan, how people want to be like me. So folks, be sure to take advantage of that. And there's still a 30-day free trial, if I'm not mistaken.
You bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Joan, what else did you learn when you covered the last meeting of this tax group that the president put out there? What about AMT? What did you learn about alternative minimum
well,
tax?
Well, both of the proposals would abolish the corporate and individual AMT, and that's part of the reason why you've got a lot of these other, I guess, what I would call tighteners in the proposals. For example, limiting the amount of employer-provided health insurance that would be tax-free. And that's really just thrown in there to pay for the whole AMT thing, because one of the other charges of this panel was that their proposals had to be revenue neutral.
Well, folks, one of the things, to me, Joan, AMT is an example of what I was talking about a minute ago when I said it's just dangerous to add another way of taxing us, which this consumption tax you're talking about, regardless of what you call it, it's another channel of tax coming from us to the government. AMT is very similar to that. It was another channel of tax that they installed back in the 80s to get around some of the tax loopholes that people were taking advantage of.
Yeah, but the reason they want to get rid of it is that the way that they did it, you know, you can argue whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, but it was designed to make sure that the wealthiest pay their taxes. But now, because for a bunch of reasons, partly because it was not indexed for inflation and because other credits have been added to the code that were not allowed to be AMT exempt, you have more and more and more middle income people forced to at least calculate, if not pay, the AMT than ever before.
But Joan, my point is, the reason for AMT ended, the justification for having AMT ended in 1986 with the Tax Reform Act of 1986. There's been no legal basis, in my opinion, for AMT in almost 20 years, yet we still have it. My point is that's another channel of getting taxes out of us, and that's what the consumption tax would be if they leave the income tax in place.
Well, I guess the point I was trying to make that now to get rid of the AMT, which they shouldn't have anymore, as you say,
right,
they're having to take away other tax breaks
right.
to, quote-unquote, pay for that.
Right.
Instead of admitting their mistake and saying, we just got to get rid of this,
they're
going to put the burden on other elsewhere on the same people.
Which comes right back to my sarcasm earlier about you know, these guys need to learn about this 21st century. It's not the 20th century anymore. They need to be doing things differently. Joan, you guys have bad news for us on interest rate hikes. What's going on there?
Well, we're saying more interest rate hikes over the for the rest of the year, basically.
Yeah.
And because the Fed is still really worried about inflation, it saw it going up in September. So we're saying another hike or two even next spring.
Some of my other experts have said that the hikes would end this fall, but I mean at the end of this year. But Kiplinger, you're the first ones I've heard say that it would go into 2006.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing, folks, before we leave the taxes. Joan, there's a new Social Security wage base, isn't it, coming up?
Yes, there is. The Social Security wage base in 2006 is going to be $94,200. That's a pretty big jump. That's a $4,200 jump.
Right.
And it's higher than the government had been predicting it would be.
Joan, is that going to cut into your peanut fund for your jet, your private jet,
by this
increase in the withholding tax for you? You're going to have to go to the regular peanuts, not the honey roasted, on your jet. The number of personal bankruptcies are going to remain high next year, Joan. That's what you guys say.
That's right.
Is that going to be impacted by Katrina? Is that where that's coming from?
Well, we're saying that a lot of it is being impacted by short-term interest rates and also this new rule that the federal regulators have put on credit card companies requiring them to demand higher minimum payments on credit card balances.
Right. Yeah, more and more apparently the credit card companies are going to require that we pay our credit card balances off quicker, right? Is that what that's what that's all about?
Well, it'll be a higher minimum payment. I don't think it's going to help people pay off their balances quicker. It's just going to get them deeper into trouble.
Put them into trouble. And something like that by government fiat drops into the laps of all these consumers with high credit card debt, and it pushes them over the edge, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sure.
Joan, when we come back, one of the things we're going to talk about is immigration. You've got some news for us on that. We're also going to talk a little bit about we're going to move on and talk a little bit about energy. And we've got some other things coming up for the rest of the hour as we continue our visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame. The Small Business Advocate is 10 till. Stay with us.
Every night I have myself.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. The Small Business Advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move over and talk about politics. Immigration is looming large, as you guys report this week. Those are the exact Kiplinger words. Immigration reform is looming large for next year's elections. Tell us about it.
Right. Well, this is going to be a big debate, and this is kind of interesting because, you know, the president has had a proposal, it's called the guest worker proposal, to allow people into work even though they wouldn't get citizenship, and it's kind of like, it's not really amnesty, but it's kind of loosening things
up a little bit. It's amnesty light, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think he's managed to upset just about everybody with this. Because,
yeah, that's amazing how he came up with this idea, and it basically stuck a finger in everybody's eye, didn't it?
So I guess there's something good about it if it's making everybody upset.
Right.
But, you know, on
the
one hand, the folks who want amnesty and want more workers in the country are saying it doesn't go far enough. And then the folks, which would be sort of the Hispanic community and others, but then the folks who are trying to close our borders think it's tantamount to amnesty. So go ahead.
The irony of all this is that we have all these illegal workers here. We do have a lot of legals coming in, not just from Mexico, but from other parts of the world. The truth is the United States economy needs this muscle power, this brain power coming in. We need these people. These folks are doing jobs. Many of them are doing jobs that Americans don't want to do. The economy. I mean, if you took all of the legal stuff off the table, and you just said, okay, let's think of this 100% practically. Mm-hmm. we would say, whoa, thank goodness these people came in a lot of ways.
Well, you kind of wonder where we'd be without a lot of these
folks.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly right. But there's another issue here, Joan, and that I'd like to point out on the sort of on the other end of the spectrum of this debate, and that is the issue of the brain power that we've benefited from over the years from countries like India, from China, from Japan, from Europe, other countries where from Pakistan even. I mean, lots of places like that where their citizens came over here to get educated, and because their economies were and their circumstances were not all that great at home, they brought their brain power and their work ethic, and they got educated here, and they stayed here, and they contributed.
Right.
Now, according to David Heenan's new book, Flight Capital, which we've covered on this show, David's a good friend of ours. He's from Hawaii. He's got an outstanding book called Flight Capital, a new one. He talks about the fact that these folks, two things are happening. They're coming over here, getting educated, and then they're going home and competing against us. And number two, they're not even coming anymore.
Where are they getting educated then?
They're getting educated at home, or they're going to Europe and getting educated, or whatever.
Okay.
But the point is we're losing the benefit of some of those folks.
Yeah.
Some of them, even the ones we're educating. So, and folks, I don't have a moral, point here. All I'm trying to say, Joan, is that this is an element. This is on the other end of the spectrum, so to speak, on the high end of the spectrum in terms of quality of the person. Of the workforce, this is an issue that's affecting our marketplace even
right.
as we speak.
Yeah, no question about it.
That's a very very interesting book, folks. Flight Capital by David Heenan. If you get a chance, check it out. So Joan, the immigration, that's going to be one of the biggies in this next election, the midterm election, and the next presidential election, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be particularly tricky because, as you know, the Republican Party has been trying very hard to bring in more Hispanic voters, so they're going to have to tread carefully.
Right, which Mr. Bush, if he were playing politics, would have had a nominee, a Hispanic nominee this time, wouldn't he?
One would think, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing about it is, I mean, either he's politically tone deaf, which I don't think he is, or he is his own man, because I have to be honest with you, I might have nominated a Hispanic this time. I think that would have been a good thing.
And he had one, his good friend who is the Attorney General.
Yep. But you know, we wouldn't want to nominate a crony though, right?
Right, no charges of cronyism here. That's right.
Let's move over and talk about energy, Joan. Natural gas, 50% increase this year, looks like.
Boy,
this winter.
Yeah, I'm going to be wearing a lot of sweaters this winter.
Takes your breath away.
It's really scary.
I don't think we've seen those prices yet, but they're on the way, it seems.
And retailers, that's why retailers are pushing their Christmas stuff now, because
right.
they want people to start buying before they get their first heating bill for the winter.
Yeah, this new natural gas thing, as if gasoline weren't high enough, this new natural gas thing is going to be a serious drag on the economy, no question. And you'll continue to report this for us, won't you, Joan?
No question. We'll be watching it carefully.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, we will not do without her. We know where she lives. She can't get away. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.